You are now listening to WBPPR, Big Pretty Public Radio. The following program has been brought to you by the television series Game of Thrones, which I just finished before recording this, and I feel perhaps I will see a better ending when the books are finished, if that happens in my lifetime. And now, an evening with the authors. I am your host, Dana Glass. Well, loyal listeners, I just watched Game of Thrones and am now recording an intro for an episode from my living room because I no longer have access to the WBPPR studios. I don't know if I've been fired. I don't know what my future holds with the organization. I do know that I have an episode that has a deadline. Therefore, I am recording on my trusty mobile device and editing an episode myself and mixing the episode and doing a whole lot of things I am not properly trained to do. But the show must go on, and so here we are, traveling to oblivion, much like the creators of Game of Thrones, who took a most beloved story of mine, made 5 good seasons, we'll say, 5 good seasons, a 6th season, I'll give a 6th season, and then they just, okay, let's just move on. Our first author is one who previously failed as a science non-fiction writer due to the lackluster response to his books titled Time Travel in Real Time and Identified Flying Objects, IFOs, Like Satellites and Frisbees. He is now switching gears and is attempting his non-genre style to the horror realm. His first endeavor, titled The Piano Plays Creepy for No Reason, didn't gain much attention. Tonight, we will hear him read from his unpublished non-horror short story titled Blood Escapes, or Donating Blood is Gross. Please enjoy Benson Bunsen.
There's blood everywhere, I yelled. Well contained, I added. I was at a blood bank, and my arm had been punctured at its vein. The blood, it drips, drips, drips ever so slowly from my own hardened vessels and into what appears to be a cheap plastic bag. The bag, like me, contained my own blood. But unlike me, contained sodium citrate, phosphate, dextrose, and sometimes adenine. This combination keeps the blood from clotting, the nurse exclaimed. At the middle of her lungs, because at the top of her lungs would have been unnecessary. She stands smiling over me like an angel of death prevention. Blood flowed out of my body like a lone man lost out in the wilderness, attacked and chewed up by a pack of rabid wolves. That is, if those wolves were conscious of hygiene and very focused on attacking just one small area of the vein in my left arm. It is in my opinion that plastic is a superfluous material that is destroying the environment, the world that we live in, I said to the nurse, as I watched my own thick, deep red life fuel flow from the small plastic hose connected to my arm and into that economical see-through plastic blood pouch. At what cost do I give? I asked the nurse. She replied, I believe that blood bag runs about 18 cents per. I laughed. That's cheaper than buying just one non-organic banana, I said. I laughed because I was getting lightheaded from the almost full pint of blood loss that I was enduring, as it was my third time donating blood that week. You're in here an awful lot, the nurse said. So are you, I said. Hey, do you work here? She said, obviously I do. Are you okay? I said, I wonder what clouds taste like. The room started to spin and my vision went from a colored blurry to a bright white. When I awoke from my consciousness slip, I looked around and could only see white. White walls, white cabinets, a white nurse. She said, still hovered over me, did you have a nice dream? You kept murmuring the phrase, I'm in hello. Hello, hello. I looked over at my left arm and the hose draining gore from my internal slop was no longer there, as if it had vanished like a ghost in the fog and replaced with an odd handmade craft. At a squint, it appeared like a small extraterrestrial insect waiting to fly up my nose and take control of my brain. But my eyes were not affected by the light, so there was no reason to squint. It was clear that what I was looking at was a cotton ball covered by a brown band-aid. The nurse placed it there while I was unconscious, as she suffered from a heightened and creepy level of sterilization. You did this to me? I asked. She said, yes. I said, but why? We were getting along so well. I don't want you to get an infection, she said. She threw away her thin latex glove into the horrific stainless steel foot pedal trash can. Frightful because the word biohazard engulfed the front of the cylinder like letters on fire. Mainly because those letters were red. Like fire, when it catches fire. Nurse Hope left the white bloodletting room like a vampire who just got her fill of AB. She took with her my blood that was once a part of me, that had flowed through my heart and into my veins. It will now sit upon a shelf until someone out there needs it. And on that day, as it fills their veins like it did mine, they will feel the wrath and warmth of my pure, unfiltered blood. And his or her life will benefit. And in 42 days, if that blood isn't used, then I'm told it will be thrown out, and that my visit to the blood bank will have been a complete waste of time. Thank you.
Benson Bunsen and his non-horror writings. We'll see. For all I know, it will become very successful. Because if I've learned anything, it's that I know nothing. Moving on. Carol Szyzyczynski of Evanston, Illinois, is the co-founder and CEO of an indie lifestyle magazine called Mum's the Word, where she shares her advice on decor, motherhood, and cooking. Today, she will read from one of her articles entitled College Admissions of Guilt. Here is Mrs. Carol Szyzyczynski.
Yes, hello, I'm Mrs. Carol Szyzyczynski, but that's okay. I know it doesn't look like it, but I am a mother of two children. So for this month's article in Mum's the Word, I have drawn from my experiences to offer my commentary as well as my advice on the recent college scandal. In the beginning of my article, I touch on how one man snitched on a group of parents who used their financial influence to get their children into the best schools. There's no escaping the sordid details in the media these days, especially with Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin as your poster girls. But what news outlets gloss over, and what I want everybody to understand, is that these people, these parents, just want the best for their babies. Take my children, for example. My eldest, Aaron, was all set to go to Northwestern when he decided to take a gap year and make a documentary on boogie board designers. That was 8 years ago. He's now a brand ambassador for a button-down shirt company that is designed to not be tucked in. Then it came time for my Amy. I'm happy to announce that she has been accepted to a prestigious university that she will be attending part-time while she develops her bespoke handkerchief brand. I don't want to be redundant, so I will share just a portion of my article, my five tips for parents who also want the best for their children. One, hire tutors. It always seems like teachers prefer giving attention to and good grades to, well, less privileged children to make them feel better. In order to make sure your student has the competitive edge, hire an academic consultant. These sessions involve close readings, making flashcards, and homework guidance. Sometimes the consultant might get frustrated and end up doing the problem for your child, but it's not cheating if your child is learning how to do the problem correctly alongside the consultant. Two, implement stringent studying habits. When Amy was getting distracted by her friends and her phone, I packed her on our private jet and shipped her off to our private island off the coast of Canada. I spent a fortune to get the crew to disconnect the Wi-Fi on the entire island, and she was so driven that she learned how to reconnect it on her own, and she developed her leadership skills by telling the workers to reconnect it. Brilliant. She's brilliant. Three, donate. This is one way to benefit not just your child, but thousands of children of people who were too lazy to work as hard as you and your husband did for your money. But be sure to take the money out of one or several of your charitable foundations, rather than personally tank your finances on a library or a lab. Though you are doubly charitable, why brag about it? Be humble. Ooh, thirsty. 4, become friendly with the school's dean. One of the misguided decisions that the allegedly guilty parents made was to waste their money on college consultants and coaches. Instead, go to the source and befriend the school's dean, even if it means attending their weird swinger parties. Listen, you never know who you're gonna rub noses or whatever's with. It might be a Yale board member who could put in a good word for one of your many other offspring. Just be sure to make a good impression, a memorably good impression. And 5, if all else fails, found your own accredited university. Anyone can start their own university. What's important is to pay for accreditation. If you can't afford cutting through the red tape, be sure to pick a name that's similar to an existing university, such as Oberlin College, Columbia University, and Vanderbilt University. Sure, it's like buying the store brand versus the brand name, or a Louis Vuitton wallet on Canal Street, but it's a small sacrifice to make among the decades worth of sacrifices you have already made for your kids. And with that, I am happy to announce, no, let us make a toast for Amy, my brilliant daughter, who will be attending Indiana University, Purdue University, Butler University College of Continuing Education once they finish creating the campus. To Amy, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. Have a good evening.
An interesting perspective from Miss Carol Szczecinski. My parents, of course, lacked the resources to provide me with a prestigious education, but I believe that you can gain just as much from life experience as you can from any book, as long as your life experience is reading many, many books and hearing people explain the parts of the books you do not understand. In many cases, if you are a person who has a difficulty understanding anything, they could make a television program out of your favorite book, and then they could dumb it down, water it down, if you will, make it more easily digestible in your stupid, stupid gullet, and then you will think you have gained the knowledge of even the highest of bloodline, when really you've just been watching Sons of Anarchy on Dragonback. This next author went into business for himself once the politics of the greeting card writing industry became too much to bear. After a very public departure from Hallmark, he was quoted in Card Writers Weekly as saying, "They just ain't got no vision over there, man. A bunch of clowns just repackaging different ways to say Merry Christmas. Bunch of fake-ass hacks." Since then, he has gone on to write award-winning cards such as "I hope yo ass make it through this tough-ass time" and "I love you, but if I find out you cheatin', I'ma smack the god out you." He will now read from his collection of holiday cards. Please enjoy, Rashid.
What up? It's been a hard time for me. Firstly, I would like to address the reason I work for myself. There's been a lot of things said about me. I work for myself because Hallmark says that my cards come off too offensive and that I push my own agenda and I slide my own opinions into my writing. I write real cards for real people. I need you to know that. Secondly, I would like to address the allegation that I called the CEO of Hallmark, Donald Hall, a bitch-ass nigga. Okay, I did that. It's only because it's true. Don't come at me on my lunch break, Donald. I've been in business for myself for many years now. It's great. I would like to read to you guys a preview of next year's line. You're getting the new hotness. This is next year's line of Rashid's ghetto ass holiday cards. And I didn't have time to trademark this shit, so don't steal my shit. I'm looking at you, colonizer. All right, so this is like a Christmas card. It's like a Christmas card parent sends to a child. Merry Christmas. The presents under the tree are for me. I don't work two jobs and go to school to have you out here believing that a magical white man's out here buying you Xbox games. Also, if you ever need somebody, you call me. You don't call Jesus. I don't work two jobs and go to school to have you yelling at the sky when some shit goes sideways. Merry Christmas, baby. All right, so it's like a Mother's Day. From child to mother. It's Mother's Day. Mother's Day from child to mother. On the front, it says, Happy Mother's Day. And then you open it up, and it's just a CD with Tupac's I Love My Mama on it. We didn't have the budget for one of those that open up with the music, so we just downloaded and burned some shit on a CD. She can play that shit. Yo, if you think you can do a better job than Tupac, by all means, this is some other things we disagreed with Hallmark about, but they don't want to understand. This is like a general card. This is thinking of you. On the front, it says, just getting you a card because I was thinking of you. And on the inside, it says, because you still owe me $20, Jerome. If I see you in the streets, that's your ass, motherfucker. So this is like Halloween. This next one's like Halloween. Boo! This is like a Thanksgiving card. This is a Thanksgiving to Grandma from all of us. Happy Thanksgiving, Grandma. We always love your Thanksgiving feast. Also, Jason is gay and he has been for a long time. Can't wait for another turkey day. Ha ha ha. Veterans Day. This one's for Veterans Day. On the front, it says, thank you for your service and sorry about the PTSD. And then you open it and it says, incoming! These are the things that Hallmark just don't get, you know what I mean? You gotta... Mother's Day, from husband to wife. Mother's Day from husband and wife. To the love of my life, I can't wait to put our little ones to sleep so I can give you your real Mother's Day present. It'll be our own little adventure. I'll ensure you can't see any of the surprises that I have planned for you. I'll just take off your glasses. No blindfold because your vision's terrible and I just need to take off the glasses. I'm gonna lead you up the stairs. Slowly, because I know that you have bad knees and achy joints, baby. I'm going to lead you to your candlelit bubble bath with water that's just the right temperature, because I know how hot water flares up your psoriasis, girl. I'm going to burn some unscented candles to avoid setting off one of your many severe allergies, my boo thing. I'm going to be playing Pretty Ricky in the background. Let's do this thing. I'm about to knock. Oh, shit. The kid is awake. To be continued, girl. I write real cards for real people. That's what I do. This is Father's Day, from child to father. Happy Father's Day, Daddy. I'm so glad you're a positive black man in my life. Although I shouldn't be surprised that you're here, because the stigma of absentee black fathers is actually a myth perpetuated by the right-wing media and often overlooks the federally sanctioned mass incarceration that has decimated black families since the end of segregation. So thank you, Daddy, for doing what you are supposed to do and what millions of other black fathers do every day. Happy Father's Day. Follow that, Hallmark. I write real cards for real people. I ain't got no agenda. I love giving opportunities to other writers, too. To prepare for this speaking, I put out a press release to all my fans to send in a card of their own. And without reading it first, I picked a random one. And I'll be reading this. This is from my, this is from my ex, Charisse. This is Charisse's high school reunion invite. You are formally invited to the 25-year reunion of Westside High School. we all know that you try to flex, but we've been following your ass on social media for the last 10 years, so we know you still ain't shit. So please be real at the reunion or prepare to get roasted, which you ain't got no vision as. Always talking about working at Hallmark and how they treating you badly, and they don't understand the struggle, too busy writing bullshit to even fuck good. Always apologizing for coming early. Nigga, who even buys green cards anymore? My 3-year-old son is a better writer than you. You probably gonna cry right now, you sensitive ass. You always did that shit in high school, breaking down and trying to play it off. That's why I left your ass. Stop acting like you better than everybody and get a real job. And shut the fuck up. Also, don't come to the reunion, you broke-ass community college version of James Baldwin. So yeah, I think it's important to give back to your community. Share your gifts. I'm selling Tupac's mixtape after this. Dear mama, I've been Rashid.
Perhaps we should send a card to Rashid. Sounds like things are a little tough. Our final author of this program is known to us as the legendary local news anchor on Indie Urban Planning and all other favorite city planning trade publications. She's a heavyweight in the insular world of governmental zoning and civil engineering, which means she's slightly more charismatic than the rest of the introverts hovering over the Platt books. She will now read an excerpt from her new book, Private Easements. Please enjoy Diane Wedgwood.
Yeah. You know, this is my first public appearance since my prestigious sweep of the micro-regional Pulitzers for my hardcover expose on brownfields. Brownfields, they're actually usually more of a gray color. For the very few uninitiated, brownfield is a civil engineering term that refers to former industrial or commercial sites where future use is affected by real or perceived environmental contamination. So don't let the people at the table with you know that you were the only one that didn't know. Just, you know, pretend you knew. So while I'm flattered that all of you have been transfixed by my 10-part series, what can the local recorder's office do for me? I wanted to share some of my softer side. I mean, I get it. Yes, my scoops and exposés from the last 3 years have been a tour de force of hard-hitting investigative journalism specific to city planning issues. Oh, but there's so much more to me than all of that. I'm still a woman. Like any feminine yet still career-minded goddess, I too write fan fiction inspired by young adult novels. E.L. James's success with 50 Shades of Grey elicited from me the very strong response, "Her? I shit out better smut than that without even trying." And E.L. really missed the boat by failing to capitalize on the current nationwide craze for urban planning. Luckily, for all of us, these are my two most prominent areas of expertise. Trevor's soul patch glistened in the glow of his conscientiously installed CFL bulbs as he elaborated on other white people's racism. I was bewitched with the nuance of his political analysis. His ponytail twitched around to his back as he grabbed the NPR Morning Edition tote bag off of his lap, revealing an impressive bulge. He leaned in close. "Wow, I just can't stop looking at you. Every time I see you and spend time with you, I find something new to appreciate. Your style, it's just a beautiful mix of styles that each pay an homage to one part of your history, you know? Like, all the best parts of you are maintained in their beautiful original state, but you manage to somehow be modern and fresh at the same time. You're not ostentatious, which makes you even more beautiful, but it goes deeper than just surface level. You're truly welcoming to all people, and you make sure that your longtime friends and neighbors are always taken care of instead of shoved aside and forgotten. You don't care about how much money people make, you just want them to be good neighbors. And that is so, so, so much sexier than those gross subdivisions of McMansions. There's no accounting for the taste of nouveau riche, am I right? Those nasty architects for hire by the hour will do anything you pay for. Postmodern pediments on the first date. The houses have lost all shame, too. They just let their car holes hang out front where everyone can see them. They'll stick a dormer window on any wall you ask them to. Cheap little strumpets, there's no challenge there. But even with your impeccably maintained infrastructure, yeah, I noticed that you keep those sewer systems tight. And the natural growth of your demure little community garden, you don't see that too often these days. Usually everything's paved bare. Sometimes I think you've got a wild side underneath it all. And I'm not just talking about those surprisingly hip neighborhood association picnics. Deep down, I think, secretly, you want to be degraded. You want me to ravish you, invade you without any regard for your identity. Yeah, baby, I can roleplay, and I'm a big bad for-profit developer that's gonna gentrify the fuck out of you! I'm gonna shove a gigantic swath of new construction luxury lofts right up your ass! I'm gonna have white women jogging all over you! Walking their dogs right up your middle, baby strollers encircling your main intersections. I'm gonna shut down your libraries and replace them with artisanal soap shops while I spray a hot load of traffic circles all over your face. And make you beg for more! You'll do anything for walkability and bike lanes, won't you, you little slut? I've gotten ahead of myself already. You know, city planning has always been kinky because we start with the gay neighbors. And then I'm gonna ease in deeper with some craft breweries because alcohol is always a social lubricant. Oh, here comes the first guy on a fixed gear bicycle. Maybe you'll notice one coffee house at first, then two. Maybe you don't even warm it up locally first and Starbucks just crashes on in. You didn't even think you'd try Starbucks, but then you blush when you realize you like it. You basic bitch, so hungry for a farmer's market you'll let anyone in your commercial properties. Your inner policymaker is screaming that this is wrong, but it feels so good you can't bear to tell me to stop. I'll tell you all the lies you went so desperately to hear. Your restaurant with the repurposed barnwood tables and the Edison bulbs is definitely the hottest in town. Of course it is, baby. The sandwiches aren't overpriced. That other neighborhood might have one that looks a lot like yours, but yours tastes better. That other bitch is in a food desert anyway. Property values rising faster than my dick. This might sound crazy, but I've been thinking. What if we tried some group stuff? Like we could turn that abandoned industrial zone into an event space and start a polyamorous co-op for produce?
We could apply for historic tax credits and convert that church into a co-work space.
I'm gonna use you all the way up like the cheap property you are. When I leave, I'm taking the luxury housing and gourmet food with me, and you'll be left covered in nothing but Dollar Generals and fast food restaurants.
Trevor's steely gaze unnerved me. This won't be a case of, there goes the neighborhood. No, it's the opposite. It's, here comes the neighborhood! Violate all of my building codes!
Quite the steamy presentation from Diane Wedgwood. Loyal listeners, this brings us to the end of our program and to the end of my stockpile of live recordings of which to choose from to make an episode. Hopefully my phone calls, my emails, my text messages will be received by my producer, Natalie, and perhaps by the higher-ups at Big Pretty Public Radio. If you're listening, I don't know what's happening, and I would appreciate if somebody would let me know. I would like to thank the White Rabbit Cabaret for providing a space for us to perform our live show on the first Tuesday of every month in Indianapolis, Indiana. I would like to thank Eric Salazar for composing and recording the music which serves as our theme, which is entitled Soul Search. If you would like to find out more about our program, see when we're coming to your town, or behind the scenes pictures, or pictures of live performances, or profiles of the authors on the program, you can find us on Facebook at Fake Authors, or on Instagram at Fake Authors INDY. More than anything, I would like to thank you, loyal listeners, for spending an evening with the authors. I'm Dana Glass, and just stick to the books. You do not need the series on television. Thank you. Good night.